Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Bentham. What do you think about when you think of the book of Job? Well, Graham thinks it's a bundle of laughs, so he wanted to talk about that today in the main section. But before that, we're going to talk about the new COVID vaccine that's been in the news this week and answer a couple of questions from you lovely listeners in the Sunday Roundup. So enjoy the podcast and I'll catch you on the other side.
My name is Graham Nichols.
And I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here, listeners. We would usually have a little chat at the beginning just to get the ball rolling and say hello to each other. But because Graham's such a star these days, he's got a sharp time limit of about 33 minutes. It's other me! I didn't tell you the reason why Graham is such a big star, what he's actually doing. He's going to go and do a TV interview. Oh, you're posh. So that's the reason we had to be quite strict on time. Okay, back to the podcast. So I can't. So do you know what? I'm not going to introduce them. We're not going to hear from you. We're going straight into Sunday Roundup.
Sunday Roundup show. Did the sermon pass real slow? Did you plant some seed to grow? It's Roundup time. What do you know?
We were back in Job in the morning on Sunday, and we had a question that came in from Matthew that was to do with a song that was a video on Sunday morning. The song was called Though You Slay Me, and I guess it speaks quite unapologetically about and boldly about the fact that God at times at least appears to slay and ruin us, and that in those moments of being slain and being in ruin, that we would still seek to praise him and honour him and lean on him as the only thing that we need. It's quite a stark song. And the question that kind of came out from that was, does God really slay or ruin? And does that mean that he caused evil? The other understanding would be that God has allowed evil or allowed us to be ruined, but not to cause it. And so the question from Matthew is really around the translation of that from Job, whether it's to do with God slaying or God allowing that to happen. So yeah, just questions around that song. Do one of you want to pick up on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great song. I think it's a great idea. I think however you translate the verse and however you interpret how you translate the verse, because there's a little bit of dispute about whether it says though he slay me or he will slay me, it still ends up with the same conclusion that whatever happens, he will hope in God. Job will surely hope in God. And you have to remember that it's poetry, so there's a degree of exaggeration going on. But I think even if you allow for that, you could say, well, as a matter of principle, even if Job's life was ended by God, he's saying, I still trust him. And I think that's confirmed by another verse, which is not in that section, but I know that my Redeemer lives. And so he has that thought about he will be resurrected one day. So I think if you put those together, you think that is a reasonable thing, that he would be saying that, and that God can sometimes bring people's lives to an end for his good purposes. And in the end, it works out better for them. Mm-hmm. And they don't lose their hope in him.
Worth pointing out the specific verse that the song is, I suppose, that chorus is based on, which is Job 13, right? Verse 15. Verse 15, yeah. So come
straight. And I think it's worth, at that point, Job doesn't have the insight we have, which is we know that it's Satan who has literally afflicted. So Job 2 tells us it's Satan's hand that afflicts. That's how God expresses it to him. So he doesn't know that. And yet he's going to, as it were, the one who is in control of all things. And as we found out on Sunday in Job 40, in those end chapters where we said Leviathan was Satan, at the end of the day, Satan can only do or is permitted to do what God has allowed. So when you put it in that context, Job is expressing something he's seeing in terms of who ultimately is in control. He's not saying God caused evil, but he has allowed it. And he does permit it. Yeah. And I think you just have to allow for those categories. Yeah. Scripture doesn't allow us to say God caused evil, doesn't ever say that, but it does say that God is in control of all things, which must include evil because it's not a separate power, as it were. He has authority over.
No, I agree with all that. I think he's, in that particular verse, though, he's talking about how, he's, in a way, he's answering the question that, that Matthew and others might be asking, to say, even if it was as bad as death, God still is in control, and that wouldn't be a signal that I won't be vindicated and that it's all over. Mm. That's not the basis on which I'm going to judge whether God's in control and whether I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's brilliant. Very helpful. Thank you very much for the question, Matthew. Another email, a lovely email from Beth that was saying that really enjoying the podcast, enjoying the jingles. Looks forward to folding the washing on Fridays because she gets to listen to the podcast. So that's lovely to hear. Thanks for that encouragement. And a couple of questions which I'll read out and then let you guys speak on. The Old Testament books of Leviticus and Numbers. Whenever I do a through the Bible type reading plan, this is where I lose my momentum. All scripture is God-breathed and useful to us. How are these books helpful to me? I understand the big picture of God's holiness, but when it comes down to it, I'm scan reading the names, numbers and laws, not meditating on it like I would a psalm or a parable. How do we read these books in a way that grows our relationship with the Lord? Let's start with that one, and then there's a second part, but let's start with that one.
Well, yeah, it's a great question. I hope the washing is looking good and bright and all the right colours as you're folding it there. I think to do with the Old Testament books that are a bit more challenging, there's a number of sort of threads to answering. Well, sometimes you just have to persevere and you might see the blessing in on another occasion when someone's preaching or you're thinking about something and it kind of connects. It helps you understand something. Sometimes it is just getting the big picture by ploughing through.
Hello, Graham's dog. Welcome to Ordinary.
Getting an understanding. I didn't realise he was in the room.
It's nice, actually.
He just posted something through the door. It's happening live. It's live and in person. Sometimes the lists help us because they're characters that turn up somewhere else and helps us kind of identify them and then interpret that other text a bit better. But we don't read the lists like we do a poem or something. So don't expect to be sort of think, oh, yeah, you know, and you read sort of, you know, Isaac, son of Jabez or something, and you're not supposed to kind of feel warm in your heart about it. you're supposed to just kind of, you know, I think read it at a reasonable pace just kind of accept that it's giving you extra information. It's helping you realize perhaps lineage, God's faithfulness, the fact there are real people involved. But don't kind of give them the same weight that you would other parts of the Bible in the sense of the same need for concentration. It's mm-hmm. a different thing that you're doing when you're reading those lists.
Yeah.
But also to do with the book as a whole, it's great to have commentaries, other helps. It's actually an example of where you know, the Bible was written to be read and the Bible was written to be preached and explained. And so although private reading is great, actually gathering together and having those books preached to us is really helpful in unlocking them, where sort of one person is focused and with kind of more emotion in a sense than reading it flat, you can really sort of overview and show different insights. So yeah, that's something of the answer.
Can I just say, I think there's some top tips that you can just there. One is get someone else to read it to you as you read through those. So with the Bible apps like David Suchet, get him to read it. It just helps you concentrate. Second thing, think about the families and the names and the places. At the end of the day, this is our history. You know, we're connected through faith into this. So in one sense, this is like reading the family records. These are the family members that we're now part of and reading how their history is connected to us. And when you're thinking of the land, you know, for us it sounds a little bit, you know, we don't know where these places are, but you know, if God was saying to us, you could have Hawaii, you could have, you know, Scotland, you'd be a lot more excited because it's the inheritance that you're getting. So I think it's just worth thinking about it in terms of actually what is being played out. How would it play out for us if I was reading this in a different context? Just helps connect it to what God is doing and how he's achieving that. This is our history. This is part of our background, as it were, that we're connected to. It's our family line, our family history.
Yeah, that's helpful. Okay, and then lastly, also from Beth, is there a difference between being unclean and being sinful? Why is it that a disabled person is not allowed to go into the temple, or a woman is made unclean by her period? God made us in the womb. He is sovereign over disability and our monthly cycles. Why would he forbid people to be in his presence for those reasons?
Yeah, there is a difference between being ceremonially unclean in the Old Testament and being sinful. So they're not the same thing. It's just in the Old Testament, there's a whole load of things going on. And to some degree, uncleanness physically was being used as a way of teaching about uncleanness in our hearts. So ultimately, people were accepted by God through their hearts being right and through the sacrificial system. And ultimately, that's fulfilled in Christ. But in terms of what they were being taught, that ceremonial cleanness taught them something about the holiness of God and the need to be clean in his presence. It's probably just worth saying you don't detect any discrimination in the Old Testament. So you don't say, well, it happened in the Old Testament, but not in the New. I don't see it in the Old Testament either. I always think about Mephibosheth, who was a relative of Saul, who ended up on David's table. He was disabled by an accident that happened when he was young. And so there's no sense that you know, those people with disabilities should be undervalued at all. So, yeah, I think that's part of the answer. There's probably a bigger answer, but yeah, in principle, it's being used to teach us something about the holiness of God.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
There's been some big news this week to do with a breakthrough in the vaccine, the hunt for a vaccine for COVID-19. It's Pfizer, isn't it, who developed this and saying that it's 90% effective. And it's caused all kinds of, I don't know, joy among a lot of people, like a lot of hope. And I mean, the stock market's gone crazy because of it, which is interesting to see. Yeah. Thoughts on this big piece of news, guys?
I think it's good news for which we should be thankful. So we shouldn't despise that. Should say it's a good thing. God's common grace is that he's given us an ability to understand medicine and the human body to some degree and viruses and seek to conquer them. So I think we should be sort of thankful, but I think not so euphoric, perhaps, as some people in the media and in politics have been, because I think what they're kind of showing is that they think that is now salvation. That is what life's all about, is, you know, getting back to normal and so forth. So I think a degree of just caution in our words, in being really thankful, but also think, no, actually, all the same problems will still exist and the same need for the gospel.
I think we just, building on that, our hope is in God, not the vaccine. So I keep looking and trusting in the Lord. And one of the means may be the vaccine. And we give thanks for that, as Graham said. But ultimately, my trust, my confidence is not in doctors. It's not in vaccines. It's not even in the government. It's in the Lord, who is working out his purposes. And he may determine that actually we are to keep being in pandemic for a while longer. And I trust that would be I trust him in those purposes. So I think ultimately it's just, we find in our own hearts, don't we, that I just want to keep trusting and think, oh, brilliant, it's all over. I can just relax. I can have the vaccine. It's all going to go away. But actually, how do I trust God? How do I keep persevering if that isn't the case?
I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion.
Today we're going to be talking about humour in the Bible, and I want to say straight off the bat, actually, that, because I think, Graham, you're going to be leading for the majority of this, you've got a lot of work to do to convince me that the Bible's funny, all right? Because I've read quite a bit of the Bible, and I'm not doing too much laughing over here. I'm not really chuckling to myself too much. Yeah, it's got a lot of good things going for it, but humour, is that really one of them? So how do you want to start with this? And you've got an uphill battle with me.
Well, you're being funny already by saying that, but you are
trying.
Illustrating that you have a very poor sense of humour. Just to be very clear, I don't do jokes, so there's going to be no jokes in this segment, because
yep,
I can't do jokes. All I can do is say things that I find amusing, which is slightly different to jokes, and sometimes other people find them amusing, sometimes other people find them dull.
I think they often find them amusing.
Yeah, I think that humour is definitely there in the Bible. Obviously, it might be culturally different, and we're kind of looking at it through the lens of quite a lot of time difference and cultural difference and language mm-hmm. difference. So it doesn't always work in the same way. And obviously across probably these three characters on the podcast here, we've all got different senses of humour, or Josh has no sense of humour. And we laugh at different things. You know, some of us are a bit more slapstick. Some of us love word plays, you know, and irony. You know, some people like it to be much more sort of direct.
What do you like?
I think I like every kind of humour. You know, like people say, I'm very eclectic in my musical tastes.
I think just a get out of jail free. That's not an answer. That's a non-answer.
I love watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, if that helps. I've just got into Parks and Recreation.
Oh, that's a brilliant show. Love
I
that
know,
show.
I didn't find it funny at first, but now I've got into the characters. I'm actually laughing my head off at it.
Oh,
so
it's brilliant.
I don't know if that helps. I don't know whether that makes me slapstick or ironic or whatever.
What about you, Mark? What's your bag in terms of comedy?
Yeah, both of those. But I mean, someone who really makes me laugh is Michael McIntyre. That observational humour. He absolutely cracks me up to, you know, tears rolling often, you know, when he's not being crude. But when he's on foot, he's just such a funny guy.
I'm more of a shooting stars kind of guy. Bob Mortimer, Vic
the ridiculous
Reeves.
Yeah,
yeah, like anarchic.
Quince.
Yeah, just crazy and weird, makes me laugh a lot, you know.
So, have you watched his fishing program with
I love it.
I love it too. It's but it's very low key.
Yeah, it's unbelievably slow paced, isn't it? It's crazy.
I watched it and I found it so relaxing.
It is relaxing, it's a joy.
Well, there's one I won't be watching, but thanks for that.
It's like in its second or third series, though. It's really popular. Well. But I think in the Bible there's the kind of root of humour which is to do with joy in relationship, which is there in creation. There's kind of joy and happiness as the Father and the Son and the Spirit are there in creation. But I think if you look at other bits of the Bible, there are obvious bits. The reason I thought about this topic was because of going through the book of Job. And there's obvious whether you call it humour or whether... Well, that's the funny thing.
Because that's what you think, isn't it? Book of Job, humour. Let's talk about humour. Having a laugh. It's a bundle of laughs, Job.
You're having a laugh by the book, talking about the book of Job, so it's obviously working. But, you know, you're in the book of Job, and Job is being sarcastic. So I thought, oh, that's nice when I was preaching that bit. You know, Job uses sarcasm, which is a form of humour. I don't think it's the lowest form of humour. I think if it's used right, it's the humour of the ridiculous, and I think it's fine. But, you know, Job is sarcastic about his friend, you know, something like, you know, you're so wise, wisdom will die with you. But then God uses it against Job. And I think, oh, humour is really all right, because God is being sarcastic to Job. You know, surely you know about the beginning of creation. Surely you were there because you're so old. And you think, what are readers supposed to do looking at it? They're not supposed to say, no, he isn't that old God. I mean, they're supposed to just laugh, aren't they? And think, yeah, that's ridiculous. Job is ridiculous. You know, let's have a laugh. So I think humour, whether it, you know, makes you laugh out loud, Josh, or not, it is a sort of technique of the ridiculous being sort of portrayed to kind of provoke that sort of visceral reaction of humour. And then there's lots of other funny stories. Like, I loved, I just have to remember their names, Ehud and Eglon. Eglon's a king, he's a big fat guy. Ehud's left-handed, but he's of the tribe of Benjamin, which is the son of a right hand, and they're all kind of right-handed. And there's all sorts of puns going on to do with left hand and right hand. And he's the left-handed, right-handed saviour. You know, and right-handed people are supposed to be the saviours, and yet he's a sinister left-handed guy and ends up plunging his sword into Eglon, who's so fat that the sword disappears and he can't get his hand out. Mm-hmm. And what are you supposed to do with that? It's just funny, isn't it? It's just like, it's both kind of black humour, everything's funny about it.
Well, it's like when... Elijah is taunting that, you know, the prophets of Baal, you know, where's Baal gone? Has he gone to the toilet? You know, has he gone for a wee? You know, like, I think we miss some of the humour of the Bible because of the Hebrew and the way it's written, that we miss the puns on words, we miss those kind of things.
Yeah.
Hence why we don't always see it, but it's clearly there.
Do you think that, as a side note, sort of building on that idea, that, and I did look into this before the podcast today, that there is a good case, a good apologetic case that could be made around humour. Because I was thinking about, I've never come across one, and I couldn't come across one when I was looking earlier. But you would think it's one of those things that's almost like moral sense. You don't see it particularly in animals. It seems to be a uniquely human thing. And is that something to do with image bearers? Is that something? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know. It's a great question. Yeah. I think hyenas in Jungle Book, no, in Lion King... they seem to have a sense of humour, but they it's do. Kind of dark humour. No, I think that I think that's exactly the point. It works in Lion King because you're applying, Timbal. Like you are in all those animal cartoons, you're applying human characteristics into animals, which is kind of entertaining, but it's not real because hyenas laugh for whatever reason, but it's not because they just said, did you hear the one about? So, yeah, no, I think it is something distinctly human because it's the ability to reflect, which is human. Mm-hmm. The ability to both reflect in a way that maybe see something good about us, but also see something ridiculous about ourselves or about others.
Somebody should do a doctorate on that. Someone should do a thesis.
Well, I think so.
Too busy.
I think that the Bible also recognises the physiological benefit of humour. You see, you're feeling better and cheered up and generally physically better already. I can see both of you are smiling and thinking, oh, life's a little bit better. Proverbs 17. that happens just in babies, doesn't it? And that's a wives' tale anyway, or a mother's tale. I think maybe babies normally look distressed. Anyway, why are we talking about wind? It's because you started talking about wind.
Slapstick.
yeah, you're more slapstick. Proverbs 17:22. Let's get back to the serious Bible text. A cheerful heart is good, like medicine. And I think that recognises the fact that actually we do feel cheered up by laughing. You know, there's the physiological fact that it releases endorphins and something. And I think in the way God's made us, we are improved in our health by being able to reflect on ourselves and sort of stand back and laugh at it. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because I think ultimately we laugh, you know, with God in salvation, and that ultimately makes our physical bodies better. So I'm not trying to make a case for, you know, heaven will be just some great joke of laughter, but I think there's a sort of sense in which is a kind of, I think it's a kind of a weird foretaste when we laugh, because it's that kind of being able to stand back and just to be at ease with ourselves. So I think humor's good. Do you want more examples, Josh, or are you convinced that it's in the Bible?
Well, I have another question.
Yeah.
Because we've mentioned dark humor a little bit. And so one of the things I was thinking before we started was, number one, do you have a choice over what makes you laugh or not? I would assume, I don't think you do. I don't feel like I choose the things that I find funny. I just find them funny. And then leading on from that, is it okay to have a dark sense of humour? Where is the line when it comes to that sort of thing? Or humour that is, I don't know, that's a bit more risque. Do you know what I mean? How do we deal with that? Because there'll be certain things that make you laugh that you might think morally are a bit questionable. You can't help that if it makes you laugh sometimes, I feel like. Where do you go with that?
What do you mean by dark sense of humour?
Well, what if, like, a baby fell out of a pram and you just saw it and you just laughed? That would be... That's inappropriate, isn't it? But that's also it might just make you laugh.
Okay, I think we probably need to talk about offline about.
No, but I think for baby falls, I totally get it. I've been in conversations recently where I think I even talked about someone dying, and the other person laughed and then realised it wasn't appropriate. Right. But there was something ridiculous. I can't remember the story, but there was something ridiculous about the lead up, and I understand why they laughed.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't because they thought the death was funny or they despised the person at all. Yeah. They didn't even know the person, I think. So I think, yeah, obviously, the thing about not laughing in a... You know, there's the idea in... I can't remember which part of the New Testament where it talks about coarse joking, something to be avoided amongst Christians.
Yeah, so, which is the better example.
Yeah.
Of dark humour. That's kind of what I was thinking, really.
Yeah, so coarse joking is, and you may find it funny in the moment because not because you think coarseness is good or joking about sex or wrong relationships or some other person, but you're just finding it sort of as a kind of reflex funny because the situation is funny. But I think that's a matter of more of discipline where you say I may find this amusing in the moment, but actually what I'm doing by entering into this is condoning a certain attitude. So I think there are moments of discipline where we say, no, actually, it's not helpful to laugh at this. It's not a big deal whether it's funny or not. It's just in this context, it's not the right thing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't think you get a choice over what you find funny, which we're just showing, really.
Although I wonder, though, in that light, just thinking about looking at my own life, that what I found funny in my 20s and early 30s, you know, in my 20s, would probably be different to what I laugh at now. Particularly, you know, back then I may have probably did laugh much more at the kind of the coarse joking. But I think as you are sanctified, as you're made more like Christ, you find those things less funny because actually you're seeing the crudity or the offence in them and maybe the offence at others. So actually there is a shift in you that says actually that changes because you're becoming more like Jesus, so that your humour is more sanctified and becomes more like Christ. So that actually what I laugh at now is not what I would have laughed at, or, you know, what I would have found funny 20 years ago is different to what now.
That is interesting because I agree with you, but I suppose that makes me feel like perhaps you get more boring as you get older.
I don't think it means you're more boring, but I think it just reveals, doesn't it, that actually what we find funny sometimes is not actually that which is funny. It is actually offensive and goes against the Lord. And actually what we're discovering as we're sanctified is that actually you have as much fun, but it's more wholesome, for want of a better word, you know, that kind of is purified. And I think, again, when I was 20, I looked and thought, man, being holy is going to be boring because that just feels drugged. But now, 20 years on, you're kind of going, actually, I just want to be more and more like Christ. And you want that in your humour and how you reflect. You know, so and I think that's part of the joy of growing in the Christian life, is that actually we're able to laugh deeper about things that are truly funny because we're being more sanctified.
It just reminded me of a joke game from youth to age. I don't normally tell jokes. It was a story I just happened to hear this morning on the radio about Bob Monkhouse, where he says, when I first told people I wanted to be a comedian, they started laughing. So I thought, perhaps I should be a comedian. And he says, they're not laughing now, which is really funny because he was a comedian and they're not laughing now. And I've now had to explain the joke just in case you didn't get it.
Yeah, we get it.
But it really made me smile this morning. But I was going to say two things. One is Jesus clearly has, I don't know, you call it a sense of humour. Jesus clearly ridicules the ridiculous, sometimes in the Pharisees' behaviour, sometimes just tells funny stories, people waking up neighbours late at night, people giving stones instead of fish and bread and those sort of things. Very exaggerated stories, which I think you're supposed to think are funny. They're not ridiculing the poor or the vulnerable, but they are funny, and they're sometimes poignantly funny. So I think, in terms of what Mark was saying, getting more like Christ, it doesn't mean to say you don't have a sense of humour, but you have a sense of humour like Jesus, I suppose.
Mm.
I don't know.
I suppose one of the other things that you just... when it comes to the revealed nature of Jesus in the Bible, is this, it's like you know, Jesus was a real person who lived for 30 odd years and had friends and traveled a lot with them, and we don't know everything that went on. Like, we don't know that the conversations that he had, the jokes that they made while they're walking along the road, the sort of, do you know what I mean, the conversation over dinner, and you say there's a lot that you just don't. You don't, because the Bible is not a book that's supposed to tell you about Jesus's humor. It's telling you something, you know, much more critical than that. And yes, it does reveal something of his personality. But I guess what I'm saying is there's a lot of Jesus's personality that's not revealed in the Bible, don't you think? That we don't know about.
Yeah, and I think so. But I think, again, on Mark's point about as you grow older, that probably the funniest times in my whole life have been with my family. Mm-hmm. You know, certain times on holiday where just something ridiculous happens. Mm-hmm. And I think they're not funny because it was the funniest joke ever told. It's the humour of shared relationship where you're totally relaxed, mm-hmm. and where you just find each other, you know, you fall off a chair or something, mm-hmm. or you just say something stupid and you all just kind of sit around and laugh. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the kind of mature humour in a way. The purest form of humour, where you're not, you know, you're not excluding someone. Everyone's in on the joke. You're not ridiculing someone who's outside your group and laughing about them. You're just laughing at them with them, and you're all laughing at the same time.
I think that's really helpful, because I think often our humour what makes us laugh is that which is unkind. It's often aimed at someone else, or it's in that crude kind of, we know we shouldn't be talking about this, which is why it adds a kind of added spice to it. And I think that's where the purity of you know, laughing, having fun, you know, cheekiness, banter, you know, I think teasing, where there's relational, it's all part of relationships and the deepness of relationships in having fun in that way. You know, I don't think, you know, I think as a staff team, we have banter between us. But there's probably times where, you know, it kind of could be on the edge of being, you know, it could be seen as unkind unless you're seeing the whole spectrum. It is unkind at times. But, you know, I think that's where we just need to be careful about humour.
Yeah.
Is actually, and what we find funny may not be what someone else finds funny, and how we love people in that.
Yeah, I definitely think how close you are to people and how much you see them kind of as a regulator on how much you will make jokes about them, you know, to them, sort of thing. Because I think if you have an ongoing relationship, you know, it's obvious. And even if you do make a little clumsy mistake, then, you know,
that's great.
It's someone you're living with, you can immediately just say, oh, I found that a bit hurtful, actually. It wasn't that funny, you know, when you ridiculed me for wearing a stupid coloured jumper or something. I felt really self-conscious the rest of the day, or, you know, that really hurt me. So, you know, but mostly it's a sign of inclusion, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's a sign of love, it's a sign of friendship, isn't it?
Yeah. We just need to make sure we don't use that as an excuse for actually, as you say, you know, being unkind.
Yes, which was the last sort of thing that you had on your list, Graham, was about sort of not using humour to cover hatred. Do you want to talk about that for a few moments?
Yeah, I think sometimes you can use it to cover hatred. You can also use it to cover a sort of insecurity in yourself, like you make a joke about something because you don't want to say what you actually think. Mm-hmm. So you use it to cover all kinds of things, including hatred, including prejudice, or including just being upset about something. But so I think that's a wrong way to use humour. Sometimes it can break the atmosphere and still communicate reasonably well, but sometimes you're not being truthful in humour in some way. Mm-hmm. You want to denigrate someone in other people's eyes, or you want to communicate something, but you're not brave enough to actually say what you think. So I think you just need to be careful with it. But I think mostly it's a great gift from God. And we have had such a laugh for the last 30 minutes.
Is that it?
That is it. You know, the secret of good humour is...
It's timing.
Timing.
Keep working on it.
Hello. Oh, it's actually the ending. I was about to just do the intro. I'm not even going to delete it. I'm just going to carry on. Thanks for listening to the podcast, is what I was going to say. We've got some guests planned, and I'm going to tell you more about that in the coming weeks, and some other fun little additions to the podcast. Keep emailing us your questions. We love to have those. ordinary@cthh.org.uk. Get in touch and come back next week for another podcast. See you then.